You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this week. Today, our panel includes Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, and Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com. Hi, guys.
Uh-oh, just two of us.
That's right, just two of you. It's really scary. Let's see, where do we want to start? Kevin, let's jump into teacher shortage. Apparently, Idaho has one. Well, we've had one for a while, but we've hit the perfect storm of teacher shortage. Is that correct? Hold on. I think. There we go. Kevin, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Sweet. Tell us about the teacher shortage in Idaho. We've talked about this before, but now we're up to a perfect storm, apparently.
Oh, yes. It is a very serious situation going on. So I wrote about it earlier this week. The State Board of Education tried to get a handle on just how bad the situation is in Idaho. And the numbers are changing a little bit over time. At this point, the State Board has identified at least 700 teacher vacancies around the state. Now, that doesn't cover every school district, doesn't cover charter schools, but it gives you an idea. So at least 700 openings. That doesn't sound huge when you figure we hire about 18,000 teachers across the state. So we're in about that 5% vacancy rate. But the big problem, Sam, is that a lot of schools are saying we don't have any applicants, or we don't have any qualified applicants, or we may have to hire new teachers who have gotten their certification through alternative means. They haven't gone to a four-year education college and gotten a degree. They're getting their certificate through an alternative method, which may or may not leave them as qualified and as prepared to go into a classroom. And yes, there are school administrators who are clearly very concerned about how this is playing out or how this will play out for the rest of the summer, because this is June. You know, usually school districts and school administrators, they kind of take some downtime like everybody else in the beginning of the summer. They usually have their hiring pretty much done by this time of year. But at this point, if you don't have positions filled and you don't have applicants, there isn't a whole lot to do except to just worry and hope somebody walks through the door.
Well, that would be 700 people walking in the door. That seems like a little unlikely.
Right. And, you know, what does this mean down the road? It could mean these positions are vacant for the foreseeable future. It may mean larger class sizes. It may mean, you know, some schools may have to pick and choose what kind of programs they can offer, how many classes that they can provide. And it hits some disciplines harder than others. Generally, the harder to fill positions are areas like math, science, special education. It's always difficult to find qualified teachers in special education. So it may affect, you know, how many teachers are in the building, how many students are in the classroom, and what kind of classes are available to students around the state. It's a serious situation that we'll be watching closely as the summer heads into the fall.
Well, it is. And if you end up with larger classes, that's more, pressure on teachers who are more and more leaving the profession, right?
Exactly. And what's going on here, according to folks who watch this closely, folks like the Idaho Education Association and the Idaho School Boards Association, you mentioned perfect storm at the beginning, and that was a quote that one of the administrators coined in the survey to the State Board. You have a lot of issues all kind of coming to the fore right now. We're 2 years out from the pandemic. We've had the stress on teachers as schools closed, as schools reopened, as schools went back to face-to-face learning in the middle of a public health crisis. You have students having to catch up, make up ground that they've lost academically, students facing real mental health issues as a result of what they've been going through for the past 2 years. You have a lot of political blowback right now about education. You have the debate over critical race theory and the claims that, you know, CRT and indoctrination are rampant in schools. And that's all having kind of a combined effect on whether teachers want to stay in the profession. And, you know, we're having this conversation about a teacher shortage after what was objectively a really good year for teachers at the legislature. You know, the legislature put $100 million of new money into teacher pay. They put $180 million into trying to improve health benefits for all school employees so that school employees are paying less out of pocket to get their health insurance. I mean, by the numbers, it was a good year. And yet we're in the middle of what could be a really severe teacher shortage.
Well, and you mentioned there are a lot more things besides the money and even the some of the things like the pandemic that are affecting this. I mean, we're giving more money to teachers, but if teachers are coming to Idaho and looking for a place to live, that whole housing thing is a bit of an issue, a big one.
That came up a lot in the survey as well, Sam. You're right on the money there because, you know, a couple of administrators said, you know, we also should be thinking about providing some kind of a stipend for teachers who are coming in from out of state trying to find housing or, you know, some sort of, you know, housing, you know, program to help teachers find a place to live in their communities. Because, you know, ideally you want teachers to be a part of the community where they teach. I mean, that's the whole point of having, you know, neighborhood schools and, you know, local educators. You want teachers to be part of that community. And right now that's hard to do in a lot of communities. There just aren't places to live. There just aren't rentals. There aren't, you know, houses on the market. And, you know, let's face it, a new teacher just entering into the profession is probably not looking to buy a house. They're looking for a rental, and those are hard to come by. And, you know, you start to wonder if it's even going to affect, you know, we talk about rural schools and a lack of housing options in rural communities. I've got to think it's even starting to affect, you know, the Boise School District. I haven't spoken to them at any length about their teaching, you know, their teacher hiring situation, but you don't have to look very hard in Boise to find evidence of just how tough this housing market is. And you got to think that's affecting teachers. I mean, it's affecting everybody. So why wouldn't it be affecting teachers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of the Boise housing market, we happen to have someone who knows a little bit about that and has an update this week on it. Don, jump in here. What's going on with the housing market?
I just have to say, I'm glad that we got Kevin's audio worked out because an hour of the Don and Sam show might not have been the best.
Well, come on, that would have been awesome.
Sam would have been fine, but the other half, I don't know. The housing market is always dynamic. And, you know, it's been interesting because you've seen last week I saw a blog posted by a radio station here that quoted a YouTube blogger that said, Boise is going to be the housing market crash epicenter of the U.S. And I went, okay, so we got... No offense to radio stations, but this is not a radio station that produces news. They play, you know, bad songs by Maroon 5 usually, telling us that the housing market was going to crash based on some video a guy posted on YouTube. And so that, you know, that floats out there. And then you've even seen some sort of some more mainstream outlets sort of say, it's changing. It's going down. The answer is, we don't know. And I've said this on Idaho Matters a lot. Predicting the housing market is folly because you just don't know what's going to happen next. A lot of people in the early days of the pandemic said, oh boy, this is going to be bad for the Boise housing market. And we've had the hottest 2 years on record in appreciation of prices and inventory. What we're seeing right this minute, right now, the latest data for May from the Intermountain Multiple Listing Service, which is operated by the local advocacy group for real estate agents, is that we saw the price of homes tick up in Ada County again to $602,000. And in Canyon County, we saw the price go down just a little bit to $459,000. Now, here's what's important to know. It's something that we haven't talked about a lot over the last couple of years because it hasn't been as important, but is suddenly. And that is, when we talk about these median prices, it's just that. It's the price. It's not what is easy to assume, the amount that the houses are being sold for. The nuance there is that, let's say that somebody lists their, I'm going to use a crazy number. Let's say they list their house for $100,000 and they put a sign out and they put it on Zillow and it's $100,000. That's the number that's going to go into these calculations. But they might get a deal for $90,000. That isn't in that calculation, doesn't show up. They might get a deal for $110,000. That also doesn't show up. So this median price that we've been tracking so closely really over the last couple of years is just that, the price. And I think that's important to keep in mind. And here's why. We are seeing a significant number of price reductions in the market. Using data from another firm called Redfin, they're a national real estate brokerage that does a lot with data. So they take MLS data and they take some of their own data and they put out some really interesting facts and figures that aren't in the reports put out by the advocacy group. And what it shows is we are seeing about 12% of all the houses on the market as of May with a current price reduction, which means somebody listed their house and then they went, oh, we need to lower the price of the house. Pretty interesting data point, because what it shows is that people are not getting those quick offers, maybe multiple offers, that fast traffic that they were seeing. I remember at the height of this, just about a year ago, I've talked about this in Idaho Matters before. We had some friends who they had a real estate agent say, yeah, maybe you should list it for $650,000, but I wouldn't be comfortable for listing anything above that. They put it on the market for $800,000 and they had six offers within 3 hours.
Whoa.
Meaning one, that the advice not to go over $650,000 was wrong. And two, who knew where the top of the market was? Now we're just starting to see some signs that maybe things are going to cool off. A big piece of this, Sam, as you know, and as so many people know, is the impact of rising interest rates. We're hearing a lot about this from the Fed. They're raising their rates. And you can see, we've got a chart in our story at Boise Dev that shows the average mortgage rate for a 30-year fixed mortgage back to the last couple of years. And we hit a peak for recent times of 5.3 nationally in May. Now, Sam, can I give my real world example here?
Yes, please.
Okay, so follow me. It's always hard to do math, and it's always hard to describe math on the radio, but follow me. So if we look at February of 2021, so last year in February, the median price of a home was $452,000. The average interest rate at that time was 2.97%. So that means if you take out taxes and fees, mortgage insurance, and assume you aren't making a down payment, that mortgage would cost $1,900 per month. Okay, so $1,900.
For a $450,000 home.
Yep, correct. So the median price in the market.
Gotcha.
So now if you say, okay, the median price of a home is $602,000. So I go out, I buy a $602,000 home in Ada County, and I apply that 5.3% peak interest rate. That same median home will cost $3,350. So what that means is in 15 months that the median home in the market with an average interest rate would cost $1,450 more than it would have in February 2021. What does that mean? It means that it's just harder to buy a house. Even if you find a good deal, the cost of money is more expensive, meaning if you aren't coming in with a huge down payment, you're going to spend more. Frankly, if you're borrowing anything, you're going to spend more, unless you are crazy rich and can just buy it with cash. You're going to spend more on that financing. We're seeing more homes for sale in the market because there's a little bit less demand. We're actually seeing slight decreases in the number of homes sold. Not real drastic, but it makes sense, right? If things are more expensive, there's going to be fewer people to buy. What does that mean? I don't know. I would have predicted a couple of years ago, like so many people would have, that the pandemic was really going to hurt the housing market here, and it didn't. So maybe this summer we'll see some softening, or maybe we won't. It's really hard to say, but we're going to keep tracking this data month to month and looking at it and trying to explain to people what's happening.
Well, it does sound a little bit like if we're seeing more, let's see, when you describe the example of a ton of bids, a ton of offers on a house for over the asking price, and now that's softening up some, and we don't know obviously how much, but that's a little bit of a breather for buyers maybe who have been really under a lot of, you see it and you want it, you better get it right now.
It's an Ariana Grande song. We're going to quote Maroon 5 and Ariana Grande. You know, it used to be, I see it, I like it, I want it, I bought it. Yeah, not so much anymore. You have some more time. I talked to April Florizic at 208 Market about this, and she said, you know, it once was people had to go make a decision, snap on the spot. They'd walk through a house and basically have to decide right then and there if they wanted to put an offer. And even then, that wasn't a guarantee. Now they can take their time. Houses were selling in 10 or 11 days. And I will say that the data in May still shows that houses were selling that quickly. But I do expect that we're going to see that number tick up, meaning it'll take a little bit longer for a house to go to that pending status, meaning it has a deal in place. But that's a benefit to people who are trying to buy a home because they can look at a few more homes. They can make a decision. It may be a little less competitive. And on the seller end, sure, it's going to take longer. But, and Sam, you and I talked about this yesterday, and I think something that's really important to know is that there's a recency bias. It's really easy to be like, oh my gosh, it's so much slower than it was a year ago. It's true. However, the market has been extra super white hot insane over the last couple of years. And so if we go back to things, the way things were in maybe 2018, 2019, frankly, that market was still a pretty warm, hot market then. It just wasn't this insane pace that we've been seeing recently. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is we don't know. I say that a lot about this topic. We don't know what's going to happen. There are some signs of slowing, but to say, oh, the market's falling apart or we're going to crash, yeah, maybe. Anything's possible. But that's not what the data shows us right this minute.
Gotcha. All right. Kevin, I'm going to come back to you. Are we hearing a call for a special legislative session?
We are hearing a call, and we don't know how that call will be received. But Democratic lawmakers are pushing for the idea of a special session to come back to Boise to consider, and ideally, in their view, pass what would be a six-month gas tax holiday. So you don't need me to tell you the gas prices are going up. 32 cents per gallon of that is state gas tax. What the Democratic lawmakers are saying is, let's put that tax on hold for 6 months. The price tag, according to our friends over at Idaho Reports, is about $180 million. So it's not cheap, a six-month holiday on gas taxes, but the Democratic lawmakers are saying, hey, look, we're sitting on a surplus of well over $1 billion. This is short-term tax relief. We can afford to do this. Now, let's remember our civics about how a special session works. Lawmakers cannot call themselves back into session. And back in May, lawmakers adjourned for the year. They didn't go into recess like they did in 2021. So they can't bring themselves back in unless the governor brings lawmakers back. The governor has the ultimate call here to decide whether to convene a special session. And again, our friends over at Idaho Reports quoted Governor Little as saying, well, I'm considering this. But he was also very quick to point out that the legislature did pass $600 million of tax relief without a single vote from Democratic lawmakers. And he repeated his pledge to come back in 2023 and look at tax relief. So if you read between the lines of what the governor was saying, he does not sound like he's in any big hurry to bring lawmakers back for a special session to look at the gas tax.
Well, you've mentioned Democrats, you've mentioned the governor. What do Republican lawmakers say? Do we know?
At this point, I don't know if they're, at this point, I'm not sure if there's really a unified position coming from Republican lawmakers at this point.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I think also part of this maybe too is the last time we had a special session in Idaho, this was back in August of 2020, it was a wild, freewheeling 3-day session that kind of went off of the rails of what Governor Little had wanted at the time. What the governor wanted in August of 2020 was a pretty limited session. You know, focus on COVID liability issues, focus on election security. And that's part of how special sessions work, Samantha. It's not just that the governor can convene as the exclusive authority to convene a special session. The governor also has the exclusive authority to say, the special session will cover these topics alone. And so it's not open mic night. I mean, you can't come in to a special session and propose just anything. It's by nature a very limited scope. So yeah, the special session in August 2020, right in the middle of the COVID pandemic, it was a wild affair. If you remember, this was the special session that brought us the Ammon Bundy arrest at the State House, where he's wheeled out in the swivel chair and everybody had fun, you know, posting memes about that. That was the nature of that session. It was a, you know, a wild scene for 3 days. And I'm not completely sure that if I'm Governor Little, I'm in any mood to reconvene something like that and have the potential for something like that occurring in the middle of an election year. There's not a whole lot of upside to the governor who'd be presiding over something like that. So my guess is, you know, Democratic lawmakers seeking to get a Republican governor to convene a special session, it could be an uphill battle.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Don, I think anyone who's listened to you on this program knows that BoiseDev.com is no secret to public records requests. And you've been pulling some in about the Extra Mile Arena scuffle. Can you give us an update?
Oh, how I relish the chance to talk about public records and Boise State on a radio outlet whose license is held by Boise State. Yeah, so I have been engaged with Boise State on public records fairly extensively over the last several years, more so in the last couple of years. And I've been working on a couple of topics this spring. One, which we'll talk about in future stories, but today we'll look at the incident at Extra Mile Arena in March. Let's go back in time a little bit. This was a celebratory moment on campus at Boise State and the Boise community in general, as the Boise State Broncos men's basketball team won the outright Mount West Championship for the first time. It was a big, exciting moment. Everybody was very happy, and some fans started to storm the courts. It's what happened next that took a celebratory moment and turned it not so great. Videos circulated on social media showed, I'm just going to be blunt here, showed security officers throwing people to the ground, including a young woman, shoving people to the ground, including at least one male who appeared to be a student, and being very aggressive in trying to keep fans from the court. Now, policy is to keep people from storming the court for a number of reasons, to keep officials, players, coaches safe. However, Boise State has an official policy to, quote, do not go hands-on. And at least two security officials for the school, not a third-party contractor, but actual school employees, we found out, didn't listen to that. Now, the school launched an investigation, as it touted at the time, saying it was going to do an investigation. BoiseDev.com requested the record of that investigation, and it arrived. It was heavily redacted. And I don't mean like a few words here and there. We actually put a graphic up on Boise Dev, and it's almost comical because it says, the investigation also illustrated blank, 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 comma, blank, blank, dot, blank, blank, blank. Additionally, we noted blank, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So it made it really hard to tell for the public to tell, well, what did this uncover? Boise State told me that it was citing exemptions in Idaho State Code for personnel information, as well as records provided, quote, in anticipation of litigation. And I'll share a little bit of reporting new for your audience. It's actually not in the story. And that is Boise Dev's Margaret Carmel asked the school for any tort filings that had been made against the school this spring. And A tort, as people in the audience might know, is basically a potential precursor to a lawsuit. You file a tort claim and give the public agency the opportunity to respond and maybe avoid a lawsuit. There was one tort claim this fall, but none that were related to this incident. So what that potential litigation is unclear at this point. We've asked the school some follow-ups. We know that on May 26th, Boise State had a meeting to talk about the investigative report. And after that, I asked a bunch of specific questions, but I specifically wanted to know what came out of that. And the school spokesperson said they do not comment on personnel matters. We do know from looking around at this that an individual who was previously listed as the director of safety and security for Extra Mile Arena in January and had held that post for several years is no longer listed with that title, nor is that individual listed under the security section on the Extra Mile website. They now have the title of associate director of facility operations. I did confirm that change happened after March 1st, but the school, because it does not comment on personnel matters, would not say if that was related to the incident. And they also have a job posted for a guest services and security event worker, but it's really hard to know what happened here. It was a highly visible incident. The school apologized, both Extra Mile Arena officials and Director of Athletics Jeremiah Dickey apologized. But what happened next? Who knows? I'd love to know more, and I'd love the school to tell us more and release more fulsome records. And that's my general appeal to Boise State, is to be forthcoming with the public, and there'll be more to be said on this as we go along this summer.
And Samantha, where this records issue, as I'm listening to Don explain it, where this gets really interesting is if you are shielding records because of the potential for a possible, in anticipation of a possible lawsuit, I could cover virtually anything. I mean, you ask an attorney, hey, could we get sued over this? An attorney is most likely to say, well, yeah, possibly, theoretically. I mean, this is a wide ranging exemption.
Yeah, and I'll say I've had issues with Boise State and public records for several years. Journalists in the market will remember, I don't know if people generally remember, that I got pretty salty with Boise State a couple of years ago over the Garth Brooks concert. It held back records from me over the Garth Brooks concert and used an exemption in Idaho State Code around trade secrets that I do not believe the school is entitled to use in this manner. And in fact, if they were entitled to use it in this manner, any public agency could hide anything ever because they say it's a trade secret. I'm pretty fired up about this, so I'm going to try and keep my blood pressure calm. But I do believe that the school is has some problems with public records, frankly, and they know this. I'm not saying anything that they don't know. We haven't published about it yet.
Rile you up a little bit, Don.
Yeah, you did a good job. But we're going to keep working on this. And look, I'm a non-graduating alumni of Boise State. I'm a fan of the football team. I appreciate the role it does in the community. I appreciate the opportunity to be here on Boise State Public Radio. But I'm an advocate for the public, and I'm an advocate for transparency, and I will always err on the side of the public's right to know.
Fascinating. This is one of the things that reporters, find out or don't find out when they do public records requests. It's something that we do every day. And I think folks should know that anybody can do public records requests. That's why it's a public record request. Yeah. And it's done all the time. And Kevin, I know you do them over at Idaho Ed News. It's a very common thing. And Don, we're going to come back to a couple more public records requests in another story with you, but we'll let you cool down for a little bit and ask Kevin about NAMPA and banned books. And I've lost track of exactly what's going on now over there. Can you help me out?
Well, yes. Long story short, the 22 titles that the NAMPA school board banned in May, permanently banned in their words, that ban remains in place. Now, the school board met on Monday. They talked about book banning policy and determined that they need something more concrete. They need a more structured policy regarding challenges to books and library content. So we may see a new policy coming from the NAMPA school board by the end of summer. But this issue isn't going away, and it isn't restricted to just the debate within the NAMPA school board. Earlier this week and you guys, Jimmy Dawson reported on this earlier in the week, Rediscovered Books in Nampa held a book giveaway. They gave away copies of the 22 titles that the Nampa School Board banned. And as I recall from James's reporting, I think they gave away 1,000 books on Wednesday, had about 100 people show up to get copies of the books. So, you know, like I say, this issue is not going to go away. We'll see what the school board winds up doing in the next few weeks.
Very interesting. Okay, Don, so speaking of public records requests, tell us the story of the Hispanic Cultural Center, a city council member, and a painting?
Yeah, this is a story that Boise Dev's Margaret Carmel broke this week. And, you know, it's interesting. So here's what happened. Last fall, Boise City Council member Lisa Sanchez borrowed a painting of herself from the Hispanic Cultural Center of Idaho. And according to a filing of an ethics complaint with the city of Boise, Sanchez refused to return the portrait that was loaned to her for a campaign event. The artist behind the painting, Alma Gomez, and the Hispanic Cultural Center both complained to the city's ethics commission in March, but the arguments didn't hold water with them. They posted an opinion late last month that said it's not within the commission's purview to determine the right of possession of non-city property, and also talked about the fact that this had to do with the Sanchez's role as somebody who's running for office, not necessarily her role as an elected official. So the ethics commission declined to weigh in. But we wanted to know just what happened with this painting of Lisa Sanchez that Lisa Sanchez borrowed. We don't know. Margaret spoke to both the Hispanic Cultural Center and Lisa, and they both said that the matter was resolved, but they wouldn't really say why or how. The Hispanic Cultural Center receptionist said that the matter was resolved, and Sanchez told us that she came to an agreement and she now owns the painting. The artist, Margaret, couldn't get a hold of her. So we're not quite sure what happened there or why, but it's just kind of an interesting story of a high-profile member of the community having an ethics complaint against them.
Okay. That's fascinating. Kevin, I understand that in your podcast this week, you have an interview with Idaho School Safety Czar Mike Munger. We have a safety czar?
We do. We have an Office of School Safety and Security, or a School Safety and Security Program. And what this office does and has been doing for several years is they go around the state and they look at school safety protocols. What sort of practices do they have in place? What sort of procedure do they have for controlling entrances and exits from the schools? And all of those nuts and bolts issues that affect physical safety of schools. And they do these inspections on a three-year cycle. I wanted to sit down with Munger to talk about, obviously to talk about Uvalde. And since we have had a couple of weeks, all of us, to process the horrific events in Uvalde, I really wanted to talk to Munger about how does he view this as a professional, as somebody who deals with this on a daily basis. What does he want to know about what happened there, and what is learnable from that unspeakable tragedy? So we go into that. We talk a little bit about kind of how Idaho approaches these inspections. We talk about Rigby, where there was a non-fatal shooting a little bit over a year ago at a middle school. How that investigation, how that review went, what they found along the way, and really tried to talk about, we're going into the summer, and come August and September, schools are going to reopen. How should we all view school safety? What's the role that parents play? What's the role that teachers and principals play in trying to keep our schools safe? So we cover a lot of ground. It's an interesting conversation.
All right. That's Kevin's podcast. And we'll be able to link back to that on our website. So to end on a different note, in 2 minutes or less, Don, the Boise Public Library is getting a new exclamation point.
It is. This is a famous, very, very, I don't need to use the word minor, but a small landmark in Boise. The library on Capitol Boulevard, back in the 90s, the then owner of Flying Pie Pizza saw the new sign that said library in all caps and thought, that doesn't have enough pizzazz. Let's put an exclamation point on there. And it's become popular over the years and part of the library's identity. The city is going to replace the two existing library exclamation point signs with three library exclamation point signs. They'll be a little bit larger and a little bit more modern, and you should see that here in the next few weeks.
All right. The city is going to pay for it, but not the pizza joint.
Yes, the city's going to pay for the new ones. Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Kevin Richards, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Education News, and Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, about a wide variety of topics today. I want to thank you so much for joining the Reporter Roundtable.